Chapter 18. Lily. It's been 5 days since I've seen Atlas. I try not to stress over how busy we are because I know it'll get better once I'm comfortable enough to let him spend time around Emmy. But the responsible thing to do is let Emmy's father know when I start seeing someone else before I bring anyone around her. It's just frustrating that the responsible thing to do is also a terrifying thing to do. I plan to put it off for as long as possible. There's no shame in being patient. The flower shop is understaffed this week with Lucy's upcoming wedding, and Atlas has been dealing with legal stuff regarding custody, running 2 businesses, and taking care of a kid. On top of all that, the fever my mother had last week turned into the full-fledged flu, so she hasn't been able to watch Emmy at all. I've brought her with me 2 out of the 3 days I've worked this week. It's just been a week from hell, too busy to even get a drive-by hug. Ryle and Marshall took the girls to the zoo today. Emmy is more than likely too young to enjoy it, so it should make for an interesting day for Ryle. The custody exchange was fine this morning, even though we haven't spoken since our conversation on the roof last week about her middle name. He was a little curt, but I prefer his curtness to the subtle passes he sometimes still makes at me. Elisa is working with me today since she doesn't have Riley. She just returned with coffee now that we're caught up on everything. We got all our orders out with a delivery truck an hour ago, so this is the first time we've actually had time to speak in private since my date with Atlas last week. Elisa hands me my coffee and then taps the mouse on the computer to check for new online orders. "What are you wearing to Lucy's wedding?" I ask her. "We're not going." "What?" "We can't. It's my parents' 40th wedding anniversary. Ryle and I are doing that surprise dinner." She told me about that, but I had no idea it was the same day as Lucy's wedding. "It's the only evening Ryle could get away," she says. I deflate. I hate Ryle's schedule. I know it'll get better over time when he's no longer one of the newest surgeons on staff. But even when his hours aren't making custody difficult, he's making my best friend choose between a wedding and her parents. I know it's not Ryle's fault, but I like silently blaming stuff on him that he has no control over. It feels good. "Does Lucy know you aren't going?" Elisa nods. "She's fine with it. 2 less mouths to feed." She takes a sip of her coffee. "Are you taking Atlas?" "I didn't invite him. I thought you and Marshall were going, and I didn't want to ask you and Marshall to lie for me again." I felt bad that I asked Elisa to watch Emmy last week for my date, because I knew she'd have to lie to Ryle if it came up. And she did end up having to lie to him. "When are you planning to tell Ryle you're back on the dating scene?" I groan. "Do I have to? He'll find out eventually." I wish I could just pretend I was dating some guy named Greg. I don't know that he'd be as threatened by a Greg. Maybe I don't have to be specific about who I'm dating, and he won't be as angry. I'll ease him into the knowledge of it being Atlas after a decade or two. Elisa laughs, but then she looks at me curiously. "Why does Ryle hate Atlas so much anyway?" "He didn't like that I kept mementos from back when Atlas and I dated." Elisa is staring at me, waiting. "What else?" I shake my head. "There's nothing else." "What do you mean?"
"Did you cheat on Ryle with Atlas?"
"What? No, God, no. I never would have done that to Ryle." I'm a little offended by her question, but then again, I'm not. Ryle's reaction would naturally make anyone question what led to that kind of reaction. Elisa's eyes are swimming in puzzlement. "I still don't get it. If you weren't actively cheating on him with a guy, why does Ryle hate him?" I release an exaggerated sigh. "I've asked myself that 1,000,000 times, Elisa." She makes an annoyed face only siblings could reserve for each other. "I never wanted to ask because I thought you were ashamed that you cheated on my brother and just didn't want to tell me." "I haven't even kissed Atlas since I was 16. Ryle just couldn't handle that my past sometimes crept into my present in an absolutely platonic way."
"Wait, you haven't kissed Atlas since you were 16?
She latched on to the absolute wrong point of this conversation.
Not even on your date last week?
We're taking it slow, and that's fine by me. The slower we take things, the more time it gives me before I have to break it to your brother.
I think you should just rip off the Band-Aid. She points at my phone on the counter. Text Ryle right now and tell him you're dating Atlas. He'll get over it. He doesn't have a choice.
This is something I need to tell him in person.
You're too considerate.
You're too naive. If you think Ryle is going to get over it, you don't know your brother very well.
I've never claimed to.
Elisa sighs and drops her chin into her hand. Marshall told me he told you I cheated on him. I am so glad she's changing the subject.
Yeah, that was a shock. Drunken mistake. I was 19. Nothing counts before you turn 21.
I laugh. Is that right?
Yep.
She hops on the counter and starts swinging her legs.
Tell me more about Atlas. Tell me like I'm your best friend and not your ex-husband's sister.
And we're back to this conversation. That was a quick break.
You sure this isn't awkward for you?
Why, because Ryle is my brother?
No, not awkward at all. He should have been nicer to you, and then you wouldn't have to date Greek gods.
She wiggles her eyebrows with a grin.
So, what's he like?
He seems mysterious.
He's not, really. Not to me.
I can feel the smile wanting to spread across my face, so I let it.
He's so easy to talk to. And he's kind. He's Marshall kind, but not as outgoing.
He's more reserved. He works a lot, and I have Emmy all the time, so it's been hard to make time for anything together. Plus, he just found out he has a little brother this week, so his life is kind of chaotic right now. Texts and phone calls are our primary source of communication, so that sucks.
Is that why you keep checking your phone?
I can feel my cheeks warm when she says that. I hate that she's noticed. I've tried my best to be inconspicuous with this. I don't want anyone to know how often Atlas and I text, or how often I think about texting him, or how often I think about him. Maybe I'm scared to talk about it with Elisa, because I don't want to allow myself to be happy about Atlas until I know Ryle isn't going to be furious over Atlas. I receive a text right in the middle of that thought, and it takes everything in me to fight my smile when I look at my phone and read it.
Is that him? Elisa asks.
I nod.
What's he saying?
He asks me if I want him to bring me lunch.
Yes, Elisa says emphatically. Tell him you're starving, and so is your friend.
I laugh and then reply to Atlas with, Could you bring lunch for two today? My coworker gets jealous when you bring me food. He immediately replies with,
Be there in an hour.
When Atlas finally shows up, both Elisa and I are busy with customers. He's carrying a brown paper bag. I motion for him to wait by the counter, so he stands patiently while we finish up. Elisa is finished first, and for at least 5 minutes, she and Atlas are having a conversation I can't hear from this side of the shop. I'm trying to give my attention to the customer in front of me, but knowing Elisa is speaking freely to Atlas has me more than nervous. I never know what's going to come out of her mouth. Atlas looks pleased, though. Whatever she's telling him, he's enjoying it. It feels like a decade later when I'm finally free to join them. Atlas leans in and greets me with a kiss on the cheek when I reach him. His fingers graze my elbow for several seconds after our greeting before he pulls his hand away. That simple physical gesture sends a current through me, making it hard to focus without being too obvious that I get giddy around him. Elisa smiles at me knowingly.
Adam Brody, huh?
I have no idea what she's referring to until I look at Atlas and he's grinning. I had a poster of Adam Brody on my bedroom wall the first time Atlas came to my house. I shove Atlas's arm. I was 15. He laughs, and I love that Elisa is being nice to him. I know she has every right to give complete loyalty to her brother, but it's not in her to be rude to people simply because other people don't like them.
She's not a ride-or-die friend, nor is she a ride-or-die sister. That's what I love the most about her, because I'm not ride-or-die either. If you do something stupid, I'm going to be the friend who tells you you're doing something stupid. I'm not going to join you in your stupidity. I want my friends to treat me the same way. I prefer honesty over loyalty any day, because with honesty comes loyalty. Thank you for lunch, I say. Did you get Josh's school situation settled? Atlas has been working to enroll him in a school more local to where he lives, rather than the school Josh was in all the way across town.
I did. Fingers crossed they don't look too hard into the enrollment forms I had to fill out. I lied a little.
I'm sure it'll be fine, I say. I can't wait to meet him. How old is he? Elisa asks.
He just turned 12,
Atlas says. Whoa, Elisa says. Worst age ever. But at least you don't have to pay for daycare. Silver lining. Elisa snaps her fingers. Speaking of children, Lily won't have Emerson next Saturday because she's going to a wedding. A night out all by herself as a single adult. I roll my head and look at her. I was about to invite him. I didn't need your help. Atlas perks up.
A wedding, huh?
A sly smile plays on his lips.
You plan on sleeping through it?
I immediately blush, and that makes Elisa curious. Atlas turns to her and says,
She didn't tell you she slept through our first date?
I'm not even looking at Elisa, but I can feel her staring. I was tired, I say, excusing the inexcusable. It was an accident. Oh, I absolutely need more of this story, Elisa says.
She fell asleep on our drive there, slept in a parking lot for over an hour. We never even made it into the restaurant.
Elisa starts laughing, and I kind of want to crawl under the counter and hide now.
Who's getting married?
Atlas asks me. My friend Lucy. She works here.
What time?
It's a 7:00, nighttime wedding, if you can swing it.
I can.
Atlas does this thing with his eyes where he briefly looks like he wishes we were alone. It's sending tingles of warmth crawling down my spine.
I need to get back.
Enjoy your lunch. He nods at Elisa.
It was nice officially meeting you.
You too, she says. He gets halfway to the exit when he starts whistling. He walks away in a cheerful mood, and it makes my heart swell to see him so happy. I have no idea if his good mood has anything to do with me, but the teenage girl in me who was worried about him all those years ago is extremely pleased to see him doing so well in life. What's wrong with him? When I glance at Elisa, she's staring curiously at the door Atlas just disappeared out of. What do you mean?
Why isn't he married? Why doesn't he have a girlfriend?
Hopefully he'll have a girlfriend soon. I can't say it without smiling.
He's probably bad in bed. Maybe that's why he's single.
He is definitely not bad in bed. Her jaw drops. You said you haven't even kissed him yet. How would you know? As adults, I say. You forget I have a history with him. He was my first, and he was very, very good. And I'm sure he's gotten even better. Elisa stares at me for a beat, then says, I'm happy for you, Lily. But she's frowning. Marshall is going to like him, too. He's so likable. She says that like it's the worst possible outcome. And that's a bad thing? I don't know if it's a good thing, she says. This whole thing is muddled. You know that. I don't need to explain it to you, but I can absolutely see why you're hesitant to tell Ryle. Knowing his ex-wife is sharing a bed with that block of perfection has to be extremely emasculating. I raise a brow. Not as emasculating as beating your wife should feel. I'm a little shocked when the words come out of my mouth, but I can't take them back. I don't think I need to, though, because luckily, my best friend isn't a ride-or-die sister. Rather than be offended, Elisa agrees with a nod. Touché, Lily. Touché.
Chapter 19. Atlas. I have no idea if 12 is too young to take an Uber, but I didn't want to leave Josh at my place alone after school again, so I had one drop him off here at the restaurant. We discussed earlier this week that he should probably help out up here to help pay off the damages he accrued. I've been watching the Uber on a map, so I meet him out front. When he gets out of the car, he looks like a completely different kid from the one I met several days ago. He's wearing clothes that fit him. I took him for a haircut yesterday, and he's carrying a backpack full of books rather than cans of spray paint. I doubt Sutton would even recognize him if she saw him. How was school? Today was his second day at the new school. Yesterday, he said it was okay but didn't expand. It's okay. I guess that's as much as I'll get from a 12-year-old. I open the door to my restaurant, and Josh pauses before walking in. He looks up at the building and assesses it. Funny how I slept here for 2 weeks, but this is the first time ever I'm walking through the entrance. I laugh and follow him into the restaurant. I'm excited for him to meet Theo, even though I haven't had a chance to tell Theo about Josh yet. Theo arrived a few minutes ago and came through the back right as I was heading toward the front to fetch Josh. Theo hasn't been to the restaurant since last week, and I haven't brought Josh around because I had to take some time off in order to attempt to get his life straightened out. When we walk through the double doors that lead to the busy kitchen, Josh pauses in wonder. He stares wide-eyed at the commotion. I'm sure the place is a lot different during the day than it was when he'd sleep here at night. The door to my office is open, which means Theo must be in here doing his homework. I lead Josh in that direction, and he follows me as we make our way into the office. Theo is seated at my desk, reading. He looks up at me, then looks at Josh. He leans back in the desk chair and pulls in his chin. What are you doing here? What are you doing here? Josh asks Theo. They're asking each other this like they know each other. I didn't think they would, since the schools here are so big and there are so many. I wasn't even sure which school Theo attended. Do you two know each other? Theo says to me, yeah, he's a new kid at my school. Then to Josh, he says, but how do you know Atlas? Josh drops his backpack and nudges his head toward me as he plops onto the sofa. He's my brother. Theo looks at me and then at Josh, then at me. Why didn't I know you had a brother? Long story, I say. Don't you think that's something your therapist should know about? You haven't been here all week, I say. I had math practice after school every day, he says. Math practice? How does one practice math? Josh pipes in. Wait, Theo is your therapist? Theo answers him with, yeah, but he doesn't pay me. Hey, did you get Trent for math? No, I got Sully, Josh says. Bummer. Theo looks over at me and then back at Josh, then back at me. How have you never mentioned you have a brother? Theo can't seem to get past that fact, but I don't have time to explain it to him right now. The kitchen is running behind. Josh can tell you. I have a kitchen to run. I leave them in the office and head back to help out with all the chits we're behind on. I like that they know each other, but I like it even more that Theo seemed comfortable around him. I know Theo much better than I know my little brother, and I feel like Theo would have some sort of reaction if he was displeased to see Josh. About an hour later, the kitchen is fully staffed, and I have a few minutes to break free. When I walk into the office, Josh and Theo are having what looks like an intense discussion about a manga Theo is holding. Sorry to interrupt. I motion for Josh to follow me. You finish your homework? Sure, he says. Sure? I don't know him well enough to know what kind of answer sure is. Is that a yes, a no, a mostly? Yes, he sighs, following me out of the kitchen. Mostly. I'll finish it tonight. My brain hurts. I introduce him to a few people in the kitchen, finishing with Brad. Josh, this is Brad. He's Theo's father. I gesture toward Josh. This is Josh, my little brother. Brad wrinkles his forehead in confusion but says nothing. Josh has a debt to pay off. You have any work for him? I have debt? Josh asks, befuddled. Crouton debt. Oh, that. Brad immediately puts two and two together. He nods slowly and then says to Josh, "You ever wash dishes?" Josh rolls his eyes and follows Brad to the sink. I feel bad making him work, but I'd feel even worse if there weren't any consequences to the thousands of dollars he cost me. I'll let him do dishes for an hour and then we'll call it even. I mostly just wanted him out of my office so I could talk to Theo about him. I haven't had a chance to talk to him without Josh in the room. Theo is at my desk stuffing papers into his backpack. I sit on the couch prepared to ask him about Josh, but Theo speaks first.
You kiss Lily yet?
Always about me, never about him. Not yet. What the heck, Atlas? I swear, you are so lame sometimes. How well do you know Josh? I ask, changing the subject. He's only been in school for 2 days, so not super well. We have a couple classes together. How's he doing in that school? No clue. I'm not his teacher. I don't mean his grades. I mean his interactions. Is he making friends? Is he nice? Theo tilts his head. You're asking me if your brother is nice? Shouldn't you know? I just met him. Yeah, me too, Theo says. And you're asking me a loaded question. Kids are mean sometimes. You know that? Are you saying Josh is mean? There are different kinds of mean. Josh is the better kind of mean. I'm not following at all. Theo can see that, so he expands. He's like a bully to the bullies, if that makes sense. This conversation is making me uncomfortable. So Josh is king of the bullies? That sounds bad. Theo rolls his eyes. It's hard to explain, but I'm sure it's not surprising that I'm not the most popular kid in that school. I'm on the math team, and I'm... He shrugs off the last word. But I don't have to worry about kids like Josh. When you ask me if he's nice, I don't know how to answer that because he isn't nice. But he isn't mean either. Or at least, he isn't mean to the nice people. I don't speak up immediately because I'm trying to absorb all this information. I might be more confused than I was before this conversation. But it does make me feel good to know that Theo isn't scared of Josh. Anyway, Theo says, zipping his backpack, you and Lily, did it fizzle out already? No, we're just busy. I'm going to a wedding with her tomorrow, though. You finally going to kiss her? If she wants me to. Theo nods. She probably will as long as you refrain from saying anything cheesy, like, look at the ships, let's lock lips. I grab one of the couch pillows and throw it at him. I'm getting a new therapist who doesn't bully me.
Chapter 20. Lily. It's challenging being the florist for a wedding and a guest. I've been running all day to make sure the flowers at the venue were set up the way Lucy wanted them. And on top of that, we're closing early for the wedding, so Serena needed help getting all the deliveries completed and onto the truck. By the time Atlas makes it to my apartment to pick me up, I'm not even close to being ready. I just received a text from him asking if he should come up. I'm sure he's cautious because everything is so new with us, and he doesn't know who might be here if he were to knock on the door, and if I'd want them to know Atlas is my date to the wedding. I was hesitant to invite him to the wedding for that very reason, but I'm confident no one at Lucy's wedding would even know Ryle. We run in different circles. And on the off chance they do know Ryle, and it might get back to him that I was with someone, the risk is worth the reward. I've been looking forward to this night since Atlas agreed to come with me. Come up. I'm still getting ready. Atlas knocks at my door moments later. When I open the door to let him in, my eyes feel like they might double in size like they do in the cartoons. Wow. I'm staring at him all dressed up in his black designer suit. He stands in the hallway for longer than I'd normally make someone wait before inviting them in, because I forget basic things like hospitality when I'm in his presence. He's holding a bouquet, but it isn't flowers.
It's cookies. He hands them to me.
Figured you get enough flowers, he says.
He leans in and kisses my cheek, and I want to tilt my face just enough so that his lips land on mine, but hopefully I won't have to be patient for much longer. These are perfect, I say, motioning for him to enter. Come in. I need like 15 minutes to get dressed. I've been so busy today, I haven't even had a chance to eat. I open one of the cookies and bite into it. Then, with a mouthful, I say, I'm sorry if this is tacky. I'm starving. I point toward my bedroom. You can wait in my room with me while I get ready. It won't take me long. Atlas is looking around, taking everything in as he follows me to my bedroom. My dress is laid out on the bed, so I pick it up and walk to my bathroom. I leave the door cracked a bit so that I can talk to him while I change. Where's Josh?
You remember Brad from that poker night?
I do, actually.
His son, Theo, is at my house with Josh. They go to school together.
How's he liking school? I can't see Atlas, but he's closer to the bathroom when he says,
Fine, I guess.
It sounds like he's right next to the door. I slip the dress over my head and open the door farther. I chose a merlot-colored fitted dress with spaghetti straps. It has a matching shawl, but it's still hanging in the closet. Atlas looks me over when I appear in the doorway. His eyes journey up the length of me, but I don't give him time to compliment me. Can you zip me up? I give him my back and lift my hair, but I can feel him hesitate. Or maybe he's soaking in the moment. A couple of seconds later, I feel his fingers press against my back as he raises the zipper. It sends chills rolling over my skin. When he's finished, I drop my hair and turn and face him. I need to put on makeup. I start to back into the bathroom, but Atlas grips my waist.
Come here, he says,
pulling me until I smush against him. He admires my face for a couple of seconds, smiling appreciatively. Seductively. Like he's about to kiss me.
Thank you for inviting me.
I return the smile. Thank you for coming. I know you've had a busy week. Atlas's eyes look tired. The usual glimmer has dulled a little, like he's been stressed and could use a night of relaxation. I can't help but touch his cheek when I say, We can Uber there if you want. You seem like you could use a drink. Atlas touches my hand that's cupping his cheek. He tilts his face so that he can kiss the inside of my palm. Then he pulls my hand away and threads his fingers through it. He opens his mouth to say something else, but I see it the second his eyes get a glimpse of my tattoo. Atlas has never seen the heart tattoo on my shoulder, the one I got because he always used to kiss me there. He touches it softly with his fingers, tracing the shape of it. His eyes flicker up to mine.
When did you get this?
My voice catches, and I'm forced to clear my throat. In college. I've thought about this moment a lot, what he would say if he ever saw it, how it would make him feel. He quietly regards me and then looks at the tattoo again. He's so close, I can feel his breath trickling across my collarbone.
Why do you get it?
I got it for so many reasons, but I choose to say the most obvious one. Because I missed you. I wait for him to lower his head and press a kiss there like he's done so many times before. I wait for him to kiss me, to press his mouth to mine in a silent thank you. Atlas doesn't do any of those things. He continues staring at the tattoo for a beat, but then he releases his hold on me and turns away. His voice is detached when he says,
You should probably finish getting ready or we'll be late.
He takes a couple of steps toward my bedroom door, and then, without looking back, he says,
I'll wait in the living room.
I feel like I just got the breath knocked out of me. His entire demeanor changed. It wasn't at all what I expected from him. I stand frozen in place for a few depressing seconds, but then I force myself to finish getting ready. Maybe I'm misreading his reaction, and it wasn't a negative one. Maybe he liked it so much he needed alone time to process.
Whatever the reason is for his unexpected reaction, I fight back the sting of tears the entire time I'm trying to do my makeup. I can't help it. I think my feelings might be hurt, and that's not something I expected to happen tonight at all. I go to my closet and find my shoes and grab my shawl, and I half expect Atlas to be gone when I walk out of my bedroom, but he's still here. He's standing by the wall in the hallway looking at pictures of Emmy. When he hears me exit the bedroom, he looks in my direction and then full-on turns to face me.
Wow.
He looks genuinely pleased when I'm back in his presence, so the whiplash is a little confusing.
You're beautiful, Lily.
I appreciate his compliment, but I can't move past what just happened. And if there's one thing I've learned from the relationship I was in before and the relationship I witnessed between my parents, it's that I refuse to be someone who brushes everything under a rug. I don't even want there to be a rug. Why did my tattoo upset you? My question catches him off guard. He fidgets with his tie and seems to be looking for an excuse, but nothing comes to him, and the hallway remains silent, other than a ragged, slow breath he pulls in.
It wasn't the tattoo.
What is it? Why are you mad at me?
I'm not mad at you, Lily.
He says that convincingly, but he's not the same after seeing the tattoo, and I don't want us to start out with lies. Apparently, he doesn't either, because I can see him working through what to say to me next. He looks uncomfortable, like he doesn't want to have this conversation, or at least he doesn't want to have it right now. He shoves his hands in the pockets of his pants and sighs.
That night I took you to the emergency room. They bandaged up your shoulder while we were there.
His voice sounds pained, but when he makes eye contact with me, that pained sound is nothing compared to the turmoil in his expression.
I heard you tell the nurse he bit you, but I wasn't close enough to see that.
Atlas pauses mid-sentence and swallows hard.
I wasn't close enough to see that you had the tattoo and that he bit.
Atlas stops speaking again. He's so upset he can't even finish his sentence. He just moves on to another one.
Is that why he did it? Because he read your journals and knew you got the tattoo for me?
My knees feel shaky. I can see why Atlas didn't want to have this conversation. It's too much for a casual chat while we're on our way out the door. I press a hand flat against my nervous stomach, prepared to answer him, but it's hard to talk about, especially knowing how upset it's making Atlas on my behalf. I don't want to hurt him, but I also don't want to lie to him or protect Ryle in any way. Because Atlas is right. That's exactly why Ryle did what he did, and I hate that Atlas will now forever pair my tattoo with that awful memory. My lack of response is enough confirmation for him. He winces and turns away from me. I can see the deep breath he forces himself to take in order to remain calm. He looks like he wants to explode, but Ryle isn't here for him to explode on. Atlas is so angry, but this is an anger I'm not afraid of. I realize the significance of this moment. I'm alone with an angry man in my apartment, but I'm not in fear for my life because he isn't angry at me. He's angry at the person who hurt me. It's a protective anger, and there's a world of difference between my reactions to Ryle's anger versus my reaction to Atlas's anger. When Atlas turns to me again, I can see the hard set of his jaw and the veins in his neck when he says,
"How am I supposed to be civil around him, Lily?"
There's guilt in his voice when he whispers,
"I should have been there for you. I should have done more."
I can understand the anger, but Atlas has absolutely nothing to feel guilty for. I wasn't at a point in my life where Atlas could have said or done anything to change my views of Ryle. I had to get to that point on my own. I walk closer to Atlas and press my back into the wall across from him. He does the same on the opposite wall until we're facing each other. He's working through a lot of emotions right now, and I want to give him the space to do that. But I also have a lot to say about the guilt Atlas is holding on to. The first time Ryle hit me, it was because I laughed at him. I was tipsy, and I thought something was funny that wasn't funny, and he backhanded me. Atlas has to break eye contact after hearing me say that. I don't know if he wants these details, but I've been wanting to say all this to him for a long time. He remains still against the wall, but it looks like it's taking everything in him not to run straight to wherever Ryle is right now. His eyes are sharp when he looks back at me, waiting for me to finish. The second time, he pushed me down the stairs. That argument started because he found your number hidden in my phone case, and when he bit me on my shoulder. You're right. It was because he read the journals and found out my tattoo was because of you, and that the magnet I kept on my refrigerator was from you. I look down briefly because it's hard seeing how much this is affecting him. I used to think the things I did somehow warranted his reactions. Like maybe if I wouldn't have laughed, he wouldn't have hit me. Maybe if I didn't have your number in my phone, he wouldn't have gotten angry enough to push me down a flight of stairs. Atlas isn't even looking at me anymore. His head is leaned back against the wall, and he's staring at the ceiling, taking everything in, frozen in his anger. Every time I would start to take on the guilt and justify Ryle's actions, I would think about you. I would ask myself what your reaction would have been compared to Ryle's, because I know it would have been different. If I would have laughed at you under the same circumstances that I laughed at Ryle, you would have laughed with me. You never would have backhanded me. And if any man on this planet gave me their phone number as a way to protect me from someone they feared was dangerous, you would appreciate them for that. You wouldn't have pushed me down a flight of stairs. And if the journals I let you read were about another boy in high school besides you, you would have teased me. You probably would have highlighted lines you thought were cheesy and laughed about them with me. I stop speaking until Atlas brings his focus back to mine, and then I finish. Every time I would doubt myself and think that what Ryle did to me was in any way deserved, all I had to do was think about you, Atlas. I think about how differently each scenario would have been if it were you, and that helped me remember that none of it was my fault. You're a big part of the reason I got through it, even though you weren't there. Atlas silently soaks up everything I've said for maybe 5 seconds, but then he closes the distance between us and kisses me. Finally. Finally. His right hand curls around my waist as he tugs me against him, his tongue sliding gently and warmly against my lips, coaxing his way past them. His left hand snakes its way through my hair until he's molding his palm to the back of my head. A spool of yearning begins to unravel inside me. He doesn't kiss me with any trepidation. His mouth meets mine with confidence, and mine responds to his with relief. I pull at him, wanting his warmth to sink into me. His mouth and his touch are familiar since we've done this dance before, but completely new at the same time because this kiss is made up of a whole new set of ingredients. Our first kiss was made of fear and youthful inexperience. This kiss is hope. It's comfort and safety and stability. It's everything I've been missing in my adult life, and I am so happy Atlas and I have each other again, I could cry.
Chapter 21. Atlas. There have been a lot of things in my life that have made me angry, but nothing filled me with rage like seeing Lily's tattoo and the faded scars that circled it in the shape of a bite mark. How can any man do that to a woman? I'll never understand. How can any human do that to a human they're supposed to love and want to protect? I will never understand. But what I do understand is that Lily deserves better. And I get to be the one to give her better. Starting with this kiss that we can't seem to stop. Every time we pause to look at each other, we go right back to kissing like we have to make up for all the lost time in this one kiss. I trail kisses down her jaw until I meet her collarbone. I've always loved kissing her there, but until I read her journal, I didn't know she was aware of how much I loved kissing her there. I press my lips to her tattoo, determined to make sure she remembers the good parts of us in all the future kisses I'm going to give her in this spot. If it takes a million kisses for her not to think about the scars that surround her heart tattoo, then I'll kiss her there a million and one times. I press kisses up her neck, then her jaw. When I'm looking at her again, I slide the shoulder strap of her dress back in place, because as much as I could stay right here for hours, I'm supposed to be taking her to a wedding. "We should go," I whisper. She nods, but I kiss her again. I can't help it. I've been waiting for this moment since I was a teenager. I can't really say how the wedding went because I was more focused on Lily than anything else. I didn't know anyone there, and after finally kissing Lily tonight, it was hard to focus on anything other than wanting it to happen again. I could tell Lily craved to be alone with me as much as I wanted to be alone with her. Being forced to patiently sit next to her after what happened between us in her hallway was torture. As soon as we got to the reception and Lily saw how crowded it was, she was relieved. She said Lucy would never know if we left early, and I didn't even know Lucy, so I wasn't about to argue with her when, after less than an hour of mingling, she grabbed my hand and we slipped out. We've just pulled back up to Lily's apartment complex, and while I'm almost positive she wants me to go upstairs with her, I'm not going to assume. I open her door and wait for her to put her shoes back on. She took them off in the car because they were hurting her feet, but they look difficult to fasten. There are strings, and Lily is struggling with them in the passenger seat. I doubt she wants to walk barefoot on the parking garage floor, though. "I can carry you on my back." She glances up at me and laughs like I'm joking. "You want to give me a piggyback ride?" "Yeah. Grab your shoes." She stares at me for a moment, and then she grins like she's excited. I turn around, and she's still laughing when she wraps her arms around my neck. I help her hoist herself onto my back, and then I kick the car door shut. When we make it to her apartment, I lean forward so she can use her key to unlock the door. Once we're inside, she's laughing when I lower her to her feet. I turn around just as she drops her shoes and starts to kiss me again. Picking up right where we left off, I guess. "What time do you need to be home?" she asks. I told Josh 10 or 11. I look at the clock and it's just after 10. "Should I call him and tell him I might be late?" Lily nods. "You're definitely going to be late. Call him and I'll make us drinks." She walks to the kitchen, so I take out my phone and call Josh. I video chat him so I can make sure he's not throwing a party at my house. I doubt Theo would let him, but I'm not taking any chances with either of those two. When Josh answers the video call, the phone is lying on the floor. I can see his chin and the light from the TV. He's holding a controller. "We're in the middle of a tournament," he says. "Just checking in. Everything okay?" "It's fine," I hear Theo yell. Josh starts shaking his remote, hitting buttons, but then he yells, "Shit!" He tosses the controller aside and picks up the phone, bringing it closer to his face. "We lost." Theo appears behind him. "That doesn't look like a wedding. Where are you?" I don't answer him. "I might be a little late tonight." "Oh, are you at Lily's?" Theo says, moving closer to the phone screen. He's grinning. "Did you finally kiss her? Can she hear me? What line did you use to get her to invite you in? Lily, we watched people wed. Let's hop into..." I immediately end the call before he finishes that rhyme. But Lily heard that whole conversation. She's standing a few feet away from me, holding two glasses of wine. Her head is tilted in confusion. "Who was that?" "Theo." "How old is he?" 12. "You talked to a 12-year-old about us?" She seems amused by this. I take a glass of wine from her, and right before I sip it, I say, "He's my therapist. We meet every Thursday at 4. She laughs. "Your therapist is in junior high?" "Yeah, but he's about to get fired." I wrap my hand around Lily's waist and pull her to me. When I kiss her, she tastes like the red wine she poured. I kiss her deeper to get more of that taste, more of her. When she pulls back, she says, "This is weird." I don't know what she's referring to as weird. I hope she's not referring to us, because weird is the last word I'd use to describe this. What's weird? Having you here? Not having a kid here? I'm not used to free time or guy time. She takes another sip of her wine and separates from me. She sets her wine glass on the counter and walks toward her bedroom. "Come on. Let's take advantage of it." I follow her lead entirely too quickly.
Chapter 22. Lily. I'm trying to act confident about this, but as soon as I walk into my bedroom, I lose every bit of the confidence that got me in here. It's just that it's been so long since I've been with anyone. Probably since right after getting pregnant with Emmy. I haven't had sex post-baby, and I haven't had sex with Atlas since I was 16. And both of these thoughts start swirling together to create this monstrous, invasive thought tornado in my mind. I'm standing in the middle of my bedroom when Atlas appears in the doorway a few seconds later. I put my hands on my hips and just stand here. He's staring at me. I feel like I'm supposed to make the next move, since I'm the one who just invited him into my bedroom. "I don't know what to do next," I admit. "It's been a while." Atlas laughs. Then he saunters toward the bed, because, of course, he can't just walk in an unattractive way. Every move he makes is sexy. Him removing his suit jacket right now is sexy. He tosses it onto my dresser and then kicks off his shoes. God, even that was sexy. Then he sits down on my bed. "Let's talk." He leans against my headboard and then crosses his ankles. He looks very relaxed and sexy. I can't imagine lying down on that bed in this dress. It would be uncomfortable and probably not very much fun to try to remove if we get to that point. "Let me change clothes first." I walk into my closet and close the door. I turn on the light, but nothing happens. The bulb is out. Shit. I can't get dressed in the dark. I don't have my phone on me, so I can't use the flashlight app to help. I do my best, but it takes a minute to get the zipper down. When I finally do, instead of stepping out of the dress, for some reason, I pull the dress over my head. And of course, it snags in my hair. I try to set my hair free, but the dress is heavy and it's taking forever in the dark, and I can't walk out to find a mirror because Atlas is out there. I keep trying to untangle it. After a few defeating minutes, Atlas finally taps on the door.
"You okay in there?"
"No, I'm stuck."
"Can I open the door?"
I'm standing in my bra and panties with a dress halfway over my head, but this is what I deserve. This is closet karma. "Okay, but I'm not really dressed." I hear Atlas laugh, but when he opens the door and sees my situation, he immediately springs into action by flicking the light switch. It does nothing, of course. "The bulb is out." He moves toward me to inspect my situation.
"What happened?"
"My hair is stuck." Atlas pulls out his phone and uses the light to help him see what I'm tangled on. He tugs my hair and my dress in opposite directions, and then, magically, my dress is on the floor. I smooth out my hair. "Thank you." I fold my arms over myself. "This is embarrassing." The light from Atlas's phone is still on, so he can see that I'm standing in my bra and panties. He turns off his phone light, but the closet door is open, and there's a lamp on in the bedroom, so I'm still very visible to him. There's a moment of hesitation on both our parts. He can't tell if he should walk away and let me finish getting dressed, and I can't tell if I want him to. And then, suddenly, we're kissing. It just happened, as if we moved toward each other at the same time. One of his hands slips around to the back of my head, and the other goes directly to my lower back, so low that his fingers are skimming over my panties. I wrap both my arms around his neck and pull him to me so hard we stumble into a line of clothes. Atlas rights us again, but I can feel his smile in his kiss. He pulls far enough away from my mouth so that he can speak.
What is it with you and closets?
Then he kisses me again. We make out in the closet for a few minutes, and it's everything I remember about all the times we used to sneak makeout sessions when we were younger. The desire, the thrill, the newness of doing things you've never done, or, in this case, haven't done in a long time. It reminds me of how much I loved being in a bed with him. Whether we were kissing or talking or doing other things, the memories I made with him in my bedroom are some of my absolute favorite memories. He's kissing my neck when I whisper, "Take me to my bed." He doesn't hesitate. He slides his hands down my ass and grips my thighs, hoisting me up. He carries me out of the closet, across the bedroom, and then plants me onto my mattress where he proceeds to climb on top of me. The feel of him against me only makes me more desperate for him, but he treats this like he used to treat our makeout sessions, with patience and appreciation, like making out is enough and that it's a privilege just to be kissing me. I don't know where he finds that patience, because I kind of want him to take off his clothes and treat me like this is his only chance to have me. Maybe he would if he thought that, but we both know this is just the beginning. He's taking it slow because I asked him to. I'm sure if I asked him to go faster, he would do that too. Consider it, Atlas. We eventually come to a point where we have to make a decision. I have a condom in my drawer, and he probably has a little time before he needs to leave, but when we stop kissing long enough to look at each other, he shakes his head. We're both breathing heavily and a little worn out from being so worked up for so long, so he rolls off me and falls onto his back. He's still dressed. I'm still in my bra and underwear. We never got further than that.
"As much as I want to," he breathes, "I don't want to have to leave right after."
He rolls onto his side and places a hand on my stomach. He's looking down at me with eyes that are unsatisfied, like he wants to say, "Never mind," and ravish me. I sigh and close my eyes. Sometimes I hate responsibility. Atlas laughs, and then I feel him move closer. He kisses the corner of my mouth and says,
"I don't have to leave yet."
When he says that, his index finger slips beneath the hem of my panties, right below my belly button. He drags it back and forth, waiting for a reaction. I lift my hips, hoping that's enough of a conversation. Every part of my body feels like it's on fire when he slips two more fingers into my underwear. Then, when his entire hand makes the move, I'm a goner. I release a trembling breath and grip the sheet at my sides, arching my back and my hips up and against his hand. He brings his mouth to mine, but he doesn't kiss me. He remains close to my lips, using the movement of my hips and the sounds of my moans to guide him toward the finish. He's extremely intuitive. It doesn't take me long at all before I'm tensing around his hand, pulling his neck down so that I can kiss him through the end of it. When it's over, he slides his hand out of my panties, but then cups me there, leaving his hand over me while I recover. My chest is heaving as I try to catch my breath. Atlas is breathing heavily too, but I need a minute to recover before I can do anything about it.
"Lily," Atlas kisses me gently on the cheek. I think you...
He pauses, so I open my eyes and look at him. He shifts his eyes to my breasts, and then back at my face. Then he pulls at his white shirt and looks down at it, and I see there's some kind of stain on it. Oh, shit. I look down at my bra, and it's soaking wet. Oh, my God. Breast milk. Everywhere. I am such an idiot. Atlas doesn't seem at all fazed by it. He rolls off the bed and says, I'll give you some privacy. I'm a little mortified that my bra is covered in breast milk, so I grab the sheet and cover my chest with it before meeting Atlas at the foot of my bed. It kind of killed the mood. Are you leaving?
Of course not.
He kisses me and then leaves the room as if it's completely normal for a man to make out with a woman who is breastfeeding a baby that isn't even his. It has to be at least a little awkward for him, but he covers it well. I spend the next several minutes in the bathroom pumping, and then I take a quick 10-second shower. I throw on an oversized T-shirt and some pajama shorts before heading back into my living room. Atlas is sitting on my couch, waiting patiently with his phone in his hand. When he hears me enter the living room, he glances up at me and looks me up and down. I'm still a little embarrassed, so when I sit next to him, I don't sit right next to him. I sit like 2 feet from him, and then I mutter, "Sorry about that, Lily." He can sense my embarrassment, so he reaches for me.
"Come here."
He settles against the couch and pulls my leg over his so that I'm straddling him. He slides his hands up my thighs, to my waist, and lets his head fall lazily against the couch.
"Everything about tonight was perfect. Don't you dare apologize."
I roll my eyes. "You're being nice. I got breast milk on you." Atlas slides a hand around the back of my neck and pulls me to him.
"Yeah, while we were making out. Trust me, I don't mind one bit."
He kisses me after that, which might be a mistake because here we go again. It's going to be impossible for him to leave at this rate. I probably should have put on another bra, but I honestly thought I was going to the living room to tell him goodbye. I didn't know we were going to pick up where we left off on the couch, but I don't mind it at all. We're situated so perfectly, we don't even have to adjust to get the most out of this position. He groans during our kiss, and that just urges me on even more. One of Atlas's hands slides up the back of my shirt, and I can feel him hesitate when his hand never meets a bra. He pauses our kiss and looks me in the eye. I'm still moving against him, and the way he's looking at me is piercing my core. He starts to move his hand from my back around to my breast. When he cups it in his hand, that seems to flip a switch in him. In both of us. Our kiss turns feverish as I start to unbutton his shirt. Nothing else is said. We just frantically remove every piece of clothing left between us, and we don't even bother moving to the bedroom. We barely pause the kissing when he reaches for his wallet and pulls out a condom and puts it on. And then, as if it's the most natural thing in the world, Atlas kisses me while he pushes into me, and I feel every bit as loved as I did the first time this happened between us. There are so many feelings that come out in this moment. I'm not sure I've ever experienced anything so chaotically beautiful when we're finally connected. He sighs against my neck, like the same feelings are running through him. He starts to move in and out, slowly, kissing me gently the whole time. But several minutes later, the kisses are frantic and we're both sweaty, and I am so completely and wholly in the moment, nothing else matters to me other than the fact that we're together again. And it's right. Everything about this is so right. I'm exactly where I belong. Being loved by Atlas Corrigan.
Chapter 23. Atlas. I should definitely go home. But it is so hard to crawl out of this bed after the last couple of hours with her. Once the couch happened, then the shower happened. Now we're both too tired to do anything other than talk. She's lying on her back, her arms folded beneath her head. She's staring at me, listening intently as I tell her about my meeting with a lawyer yesterday. He says I did the right thing by taking him to the hospital. They were legally obligated to notify Child Protective Services. I'm not sure how I feel about that, though. It puts the power in the hands of the state, and what if they don't think I'm the best place for him? Why wouldn't they? I work a lot, I'm not married, so Josh will be alone some of the time, and I have no experience raising kids. They might think Tim is a better fit since he's the biological father. They could even give him back to my mother. I'm not even sure what she did is enough to have him removed from her custody. Lily leans toward me and presses a kiss against my forearm. I'm going to tell you what you told me the first time you FaceTimed me. You said, "You're stressing over things that haven't even happened yet." I fold my lips together momentarily. I did say that. "You did," she says. She tucks herself against me, wrapping a leg over my thigh. "It'll work out, Atlas. You're the best thing for him, and anyone who has vested interest will see that, I promise." I fold myself around her, fitting her head under my chin. It's incredible how much we've both changed physically since we were teens, but we somehow still fit together just as perfectly as we did back then. "I've been wanting to ask you something," she says, pulling back far enough to look at me. "Remember our first time? What happened after that night? After my father hurt you?" I'm not surprised she's thinking about that, because I've thought about it as well tonight. It's the first time we've been intimate since that night that ended so terribly, so it's hard not to compare them. That was what her very last journal entry was about. It was painful to read, seeing how much she was hurting. I wish more than anything it could have ended better than it did. "I don't remember a lot from that night," I admit. "I woke up in the hospital the next day, confused. I knew your father was the one who had hurt me, I remembered that much, but I had no idea if he did to you what he had done to me. I hit the call button several times, and when no one came to my room, I somehow hobbled into the hallway with a broken ankle. I was frantic, asking if you were okay, but the poor nurse had no idea what I was talking about." Lily tightens her grip around me as I talk. "She finally calmed me down enough to get your information from me, and then she came back to let me know that I was the only one brought in with injuries. She asked me if your father was Andrew Bloom. I told her yes, and I told her I wanted to press charges. When I asked her if she could have an officer come to the room, she looked at me sympathetically. I remember her exact words. She said, 'The law is on his side, honey. No one turns him in, not even his wife.'" Lily exhales against my chest, so I pause and press a kiss against the top of her head. "Then what?" she whispers. "I did it anyway," I say. "I knew if I didn't report him, your mother would never get out of that situation. I made the nurse contact an officer, and when one finally arrived that afternoon, he wasn't there to listen to my statement. He was there to make it clear that if anybody was going to be arrested, it wouldn't be your father. He said, 'Your father could have me arrested for breaking into houses and forcing myself on his daughter.'" Those were the officer's exact words. Like, the relationship you and I had was something criminal. I felt guilty about that for years. Lily looks up at me and places a hand on my cheek. "What? Atlas, we're only 2.5 years apart. You did absolutely nothing wrong." I appreciate that she says that, but it doesn't change the fact that I felt guilty for bringing stress into her life. But I also felt guilty for leaving her once I did bring stress into her life. I don't know that any choice I made back then would have felt right. I didn't want to stay and put you in more danger by showing up at your house again, and I didn't want to be arrested because then I wouldn't have been able to go to the military. I thought the best thing would be to put space between us. And then someday I would contact you down the line and see if you ever still thought of me like I thought of you. Every day, she whispers. I thought of you every single day. I run my hand over her back for a while, and then I stroke my fingers through her hair, wondering how in the world she can make me feel so whole when I had no idea I was only half of myself without her. Of course I've missed her all these years. And if I could have snapped my fingers and brought her back into my life, I would have in a heartbeat. But we had built lives without each other, her with Ryle and me with my career, and I assumed that was our fate. I'd grown used to not living life with her, but now that she's back, I don't know that I could ever feel whole again without her, especially after tonight. Lily, I whisper. She doesn't respond. I pull back a little and can see that her eyes are closed and her arm has gone limp around me. I'm scared if I move, I'll wake her up. But I told Josh I'd only be a couple hours later than the time I initially gave him, and I'm at 3 hours now. I'm not even sure I'm allowed to leave 12-year-olds by themselves. Brad was okay with it when I asked if they were fine by themselves, and if he doesn't allow Theo to have a phone, I doubt he'd let me leave them alone while I went on a date unless Brad had left Theo alone before. Maybe I should Google what the age limit is in Boston for a kid to stay by themselves. I'm overthinking this. Of course, they're fine. Neither of them has called or texted with any kind of emergency, and 12-year-olds even babysit other kids sometimes. I think I'm fine, but I still need to get home. I don't know Josh well enough yet to be convinced he isn't throwing a rager in my house right now. I slowly remove my arm from beneath Lily's head and ease out of her bed. I dress as quietly as I can and then go in search of a pen and paper. I don't want to wake her up, but I don't want to leave without saying anything, especially after the night we had. I find a notebook and a pen in her kitchen drawer, so I sit at the table to write her a letter. When I finish, I take it back to her bedroom and I set the note on the pillow next to her. Then I kiss her goodnight.